Hi, and welcome to another episode of Journey to a Dream, which is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. So our guest today, which once again has been organised by Lee from the Andreas Racing Association, thank you so much. This guest has had the mountain course in their sights for a very long time, and last year really was something special for them. Let's meet them now.
Yeah, so my name's Daniel Ingham, 32 years old. I've been road racing, well, circuit racing. I started when I was probably about 10, and I moved on to the roads in 2016 to aim to compete at the Ironman.
And Daniel, where are you from?
Melton Mowbray, near Leicester.
Tell us about Melton Mowbray. What's it like?
It's a nice little town. It's in a bit of the countryside in the Midlands, world famous for our pork pies.
Oh, really? Okay. And are you a pork pie fan?
I am for sure, yes.
But you say it started around 10. So is motorbike something that you grew up within the family or something that you found as a passion of your own?
Yeah, basically my dad's dad, he was the one who brought motorbikes into the family. So he never raced himself. My dad's holidays were trips to the Isle of Man, basically. So every year I was over to the TT as he was a kid. So obviously that got the passion into my dad. Dad owned a motorcycle shop as a service and repair centre, which yeah, I'd spend quite a lot of time over there, like Saturdays and Friday afternoons after work and stuff, going over and helping out. I basically got the passion from that. My dad did a bit of motorcycle racing, did a bit of short circuit stuff on a CBR 400 he used to ride. And a CB500 as well, just at club level, you know.
Having that shop then, that service and repair shop, did that mean that you were sort of quite hands-on yourself with sort of learning how to tinker around with the machines?
Exactly that, yeah. Everything I've learned from my dad. So on our race bikes now, I do all the servicing, repairs, you know, anything, you name it. And it's all pretty much down to him, watching him over the years, basically.
That's a great gift to pass down, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It makes racing a damn sight cheaper.
But I guess also there's that notion of trust as well, that you know that if you've looked at what you're going out on, you've got that confidence there.
Yeah, and that is a massive thing. It's probably a bit of a hampering now on myself because I don't like other people touching my bikes. You know, I don't even allow my dad to do stuff up on it. I am very much a bit, I don't know what the word is for it.
I suppose protective, yeah. I would say protective. You can say anal. Yeah, go on. So I'm intrigued then. So your dad came over for his holidays to the Isle of Man because his dad was involved in some racing. Do you remember your first time over here?
I do, yeah. Dad brought me over for the centenary in 2007. I can't remember what age I would have been then, but quick maths, but I remember we got off the boat. We went straight to Craigney Bar and sidecar practices were out. And oh my God, what an experience that was. Pop your head over the hedge. I went before when you used to be able to watch pretty close to the exit coming out of Craigney Bar. And it was just, wow, what a place. You know, I think it was probably from that trip on was like, I really want to do this at some point. You know, yeah, that was basically the driving factor of that first trip over.
I can see how if you had grown up in that sort of world already, that seeing these superheroes out there would be so inspiring.
Oh, yeah, it was, yeah, incredible, you know. And I believe that was that year that John McGuinness did do a first 130 lap, wasn't it?
There was a lot of publicity about that. And did you think at that point, as you were watching, that, you know, maybe one day that will be me out there?
I mean, it was the first start to an idea of going over, you know. At that point, all I was doing was a bit short circuit racing. I was probably on a pretty RS125 at that point. So, you know, but it was very much the driving factor. It was like, put you a bit of a, there's a different world out of there rather than just short circuit, you know.
And how was that journey then? Once you made the decision and thought, I want to race on the mountain course, how was it sort of finding out what you needed to do, getting the financial and emotional support, I guess, to help you along with it?
Yeah, basically, I was racing at Bemsey on a Honda RBF 400. And there was a couple of guys there that had done the Manx before. I think Gary Jarman was the guy who I spoke to. And he said to me, I wish I went and did that, but now I'm too old. And I thought, I don't want to be that guy who has to say that when he's older. So let's go and have a look at what we need to do. We went over in 2015 to the Manx as a bit of a recce to go and figure out what's what and go and speak to the ladies in the office. And that was it then. From that point on was, right, we're going to go and do it in 2016. And let's get the homework started.
And it's not just a couple of weeks of planning, is it? There will have been a whole year that went into getting you on that start line in 2016. What's the sort of things that really stand out for you in that time?
Well, obviously, the newcomers weekend, that was good. That was back in the days when guys didn't have that. And the first time we saw it was setting off down Bray Hill, you know. The newcomers weekend was a really big opener, eye-opener. The things you need to look at. If you drove around the island, you wouldn't even see these little painted marks everywhere and stuff like that. But yeah, it was the PlayStation, like a lot of people say it, the old PlayStation on the PS2 game. That was a really good thing to do because it got you, you know, instead of just watching on board, you are actually thinking of where you're going. Apart from understanding where's left and where's right, it's not much more help than that.
Have you got any idea of how many laps you think you must have done of the mountain course before you actually set off for the first time?
Oh, man. I think I did the Newcomers weekend. I mean, I think I did three more weekend trips over. I did one, I just foot passenger on the boat, came over with a push bike. I think it was James from McCreese Car Hire.
Oh, Milcrease, yeah.
He gave me a car for the weekend. So I had a push bike, just left it in the side of the road, rode around for the weekend and then came back. I couldn't tell you how many laps. I was well over 30, 40 laps. It must have been in a car.
That's incredible. But I guess nothing can prepare for you what it's like when you go out and those roads are closed for the first time.
Yeah, it's a completely different experience when you're using both sides of the roads, that's for sure. Everything looks and it's just completely different. Yeah, you can't see around the corners like you can because obviously you can't be on the wrong side of the road. And then the bumps are, you know, you've not experienced these bumps because you've not been allowed to drive in those places.
And that first lap out is the control speed lap. But I mean, it still looks pretty quick. How did you find that when you were finally out there doing what you wanted to do?
That was a bit of an interesting one because I didn't enjoy my first lap. I can't remember who I was behind, but he obviously hadn't done much of his own work. And he was a bit all over the place. And I ended up dropping back. Way back from him because I didn't feel like, one, I couldn't see what the instructor was doing ahead and he was just upsetting me all over the way. But we must have gone round at like, I don't know, an 80 mile an hour lap. And you just think to yourself, how the hell are you going to go any faster than this? You know, everything's just coming by way too fast. It was a lot to compute. And I came in and I was very quiet after it. And I was like, I'm not too sure I want to do this. Like, this is, you know, it's insane.
So what changed your mind then?
It was basically we had, for, you know, the next session goes out. So you had a bit of an hour or so to calm down. And I remember I went out completely dead last at the pack. And I was like, I'm just going to go out. Nobody in front of me. Take my time and see how I feel. And then that was it. And when I was there on my own with nobody in front of me, it was the best thing in the world. And that was it. I was hooked.
You did ultimately retire from the newcomers race, but you had a fantastic result in the lightweight MGP. I think you were fifth, weren't you, in that first year for you. Do you remember what happened in the newcomers? And that must have been so frustrating.
Yeah, unfortunately, I ran out of electricity. I was running a total loss system on my 400. I thought I'd been okay. It was a lithium battery I was running and we kept checking it through practice. It's like, yeah, this is definitely going to be okay for a four lap race. And I think it will still be straight. I ran out of electric. So that was a lesson learned there of how quick the amperage drops off these lithium batteries.
I can't imagine what goes through your head at a moment like that when you realise your race is over. Were you at least near the pub?
I was at the pub, fortunately. And the lady did look after us.
Small consolation. But then, as I say, you went on to do so well in that lightweight MGP, which I guess, from your point of view, with everything that's gone into it, just really does make it worthwhile.
Yeah, and that was a really big shock of a result, really. You know, we were just going over to go and have a go. And to come back in the fifth place was like, well, hell, we can, you know, we might not be too bad at this over here. Because I was always sort of like a mid-pack rider at club racing. So to come back with a result like that imagine I've done it now when we put the entry in, to be fair.
And who did you have with you?
It was me, my wife, Helena. Well, wasn't the wife by then. And my messmate, Angus. Basically, Angus is my right-hand man. He's been at pretty much every single race meeting, bar a couple, is, you know, phenomenal, to be fair. For a guy to take all his time off work and stuff to come and help out is incredible. And my dad came over. He was obviously working at the workshop at that point, so he couldn't take all the time off. So I believe he came over for race week.
And do you remember that conversation with him when you'd finished that lightweight race?
Oh, it was, I can see how proud he was, to be fair. And, you know, there probably was a part of him that wanted to do it himself when he was younger. But it's the financial strain, isn't it? And, you know, all the time and the effort to doing it back then.
And you mentioned your now wife, Helena. Is she into bikes generally, or is this just not quite as much a passion for her as it is for you? Because I just wonder what it was like for her standing out on the sidelines.
Yeah, she's not really been into bikes before she met me, but she's massively supportive. You know, no matter what we decide to do or where to go, she's 100% behind me, and she understands how much, you know, joy it brings. And, you know, it's a good experience to go and experience these different places. You know, there's a lot of people out there who rarely leave their own town, isn't it? You know, so it's a bit of a holiday for us at the same time.
And where else would you want to come, especially as I'm looking out across Douglas Bay at the moment and the sun is shining and we're keeping it all crossed, that will continue for the next couple of weeks. But obviously then a great start to your mountain course career. I'm guessing there wasn't much thought involved in the fact that you were going to come back the year after.
I believe we decided we're coming straight back after that first event. And that was at the point where you didn't have to pay for a class of superbike ride. So that goal was, after the first year, I was like, right, let's try and go back next year on the 400, get a bit of a better lap time and, you know, hopefully position. And to do that, we decided to buy a Classic 750. It was a complete £600 ePay buy, which we ended up stripping down and rebuilding. But it was mainly just a chance to get more laps around the island without having to pay for an extra entry, essentially.
And how did that all go over the next couple of years?
Yeah, they went really well, to be fair. It was getting those extra laps in because I was able to go out in both qualifying sessions. I basically doubled my track time, so I was able to learn the place a lot faster. And it helped being on a really old 1990 750 and jumping onto my little 400. You could wring his neck a bit more out of that, for sure.
And I'm guessing it's learning the course so well then that brought you up to 2019, which I think it's fair to say is when that spark really seemed to take off. And even more, you seem so comfortable over here, because that's when you started lapping at over 120 miles an hour, joining that Tommy Club. How did that feel?
So basically, I've never ridden anything other than that 400 and then the Class 750. I'd never ridden a modern 600 or a 750. And it was Dave East, which probably a lot of people would remember the name. He won the Manx Grand Prix. Oh, I can't remember back when. And then went on to ride at a TT. And he gave me the opportunity to ride one of his mates, who was Trevor Mathewson from Strangford Holiday Park. They were good friends with David Morgans. They were part of his team when he was racing over at the TT. And he essentially, Trevor had a 750. And Dave said, you know, would you mind this lad having a go on it to go and give it, you know, go and give it a ride out and see how he gets on? And that was probably the turning point of, we went out the first year on that was 2018. Unfortunately, I did have a bit of an accident coming into Silver Bridge. It was purely missing my braking marker. And it was, you know, one of those where you got those soft barriers and you just burst through the barriers and go down that little drop. More of an embarrassing crash than a painful one, you know.
It still, I guess, has an effect on your confidence, maybe. How do you pick yourself up after that, both physically, I guess, and mentally?
Yeah, the worst thing about that is that's how you end the event. You know, you end it in a hedge. And it's like, you got to wait all year now to get back. And yeah, it was a confidence knock, but it was also a, here's a reality, you know, this place can bite you, and don't try and make the time up in those silly little braking places, because it wasn't worth the punishment, basically.
And I guess it just goes to show just how much is involved. I mean, we talk about learning the course, but even when you've had, literally by that point, you'd had hundreds of laps around here, but those things can still catch you out. And it's a real lesson, I guess, for anybody who is just starting out on this, to not take it for granted.
That's it. And it's purely that. Probably one of the reasons for coming off was in the pits. I never really, I've always told the lads, I don't want to know where I am, because I'm just going to ride as fast as I can ride and, you know, see where we are at the end of it. And somebody said, well, he's in fifth place. I was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. And then, yeah, got to my head. Obviously, a little bit of misjudgment, and that's all it takes, isn't it?
So then we obviously entered the COVID years after that. And I just wonder, from a rider who has clearly been making such progression to suddenly having not happening anymore, how do you deal with that?
I know, that was a proper kickback, because 2019 was a really good year. I'd say we've got that Tommy Club, and we left that year at such a high, and then to have it all taken away from you was, yeah, it was hard to swallow, that was for sure. It was up to the point where it was almost booking ferries, and then it all got took away.
Yeah, it's a real difficult thing. I can't even begin to imagine. But then we got past that, and then was there any hesitation at all about getting back for the first MGP that was actually running?
No, not at all. It was very much, right, let's get going. We want to get back there as quick as we can. First year back was with the year when they took the 750s out, was that 20, when did it come back?
2022. Yeah.
So I was really excited to come back. And then they changed the rules where you couldn't ride a 750. And then that basically left me with no bike for the senior. And I was like, oh, you know, we've come away at 2019, had such a good result. And now I've got nothing to ride. So it was a real stress factor of what we're going to do, how we're going to get out there. So it was just by chance. I was asking around, you know, who's got bikes. And I spoke to Russell Brook. And the question was in to him was, do you know anybody who's got a 600 around that wouldn't mind me riding? Because he's an engine builder for a lot of the club races, and so he knows a lot of the people who are riding the bikes. He said to me, leave it with me, I'll try and see what I can find. And it might have been that day, like a few hours later, he rang me up and goes, I tell you what, you can ride one of mine. And I was like, wow, you know, it's incredible. And without that, I don't believe I would have been on the grid that year for the senior. And that's when we ended up going, was that a second?
That was second, yeah, you were second that year, which must be such a feeling when somebody's put their faith in you, I guess, and said, you can ride one of my bikes, and then you go and finish in that position. That's a nice conversation to go back to, isn't it?
You know, it was nice to give him that. It was, for this bike, all we had, he gave it to me. I went around Mallory Park on it for a few sessions, and then we set off down Bray Hill on it. It was like zero track time. Never ridden a bike much before, and he was chuffed to have his bike on the podium. And then it's a credit to himself of what a decent engine he could build, you know, and the bike didn't miss a beat for the whole event.
And then last year, I don't think we'll ever forget seeing you coming over the line. I mean, that really just proved what a serious contender you were. When you crossed over that finish line on Glencrutchery Road and realised you were going to be on the top step of the podium, how did that feel?
Oh, but yeah, I mean, an absolute dream come true that was, wasn't it? It was, I didn't 100% know until I came up to the Parc Thermé. I remember seeing a few guys on the mountain waving and putting their fingers up. I was like, no way I'm in first. I was that stressed out for the race because we kept getting delayed and delayed for the weather. And I was like, after all this for the whole duration of the event, and then now potentially we're not going to race, I think I wound myself up that much that I wasn't riding smooth, so I ended up knackering myself out. And then to come over the line and to know I've won it, I was like, unbelievable. I didn't even think I was going to be on the podium with the way I was riding in my head.
So what do you think was different then that helped you bring it all together, I guess?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. And it might have been, one, because the weather conditions were so iffy, that I've had those years there now where we have gone out in damp weather, so I know where to expect, you know, where we can push on and where we need to be a bit steady in the wet. The few guys behind us hadn't had that time there, so maybe that was a bit of a jump up for me. Unfortunately, Jamie Williams wasn't there, so it would have been nice for him to be in the race, but he obviously had that crash on the first night. But yeah, I'm not too sure. It all just come together basically, and I really wanted it, like, really wanted it.
You mentioned the weather. As we remember MGP 2024, it was so frustrating. I just wonder how you approach tricky conditions like that, and what kind of, I don't know, I guess a mental shift is needed to stay really committed when the course isn't giving you much back.
Yeah, going first on the road wasn't ideal. That's 100%. Because I always don't want to ride with any pit boards, because I'm going as fast as I can. And I always think, if you've got a pit board where you're saying, oh, somebody's right behind you, or you're right near somebody, you might push on. And then that push on is enough for you to make a mistake, you know. So I always just ride as fast as I comfortably can.
You've also, Daniel, had strong results in Ireland, a win at Cookstown, your Northwest 200 debut. Tell us what it's like adapting to those different road courses after years of focusing just on the mountain.
Yeah, I mean, you go to Ireland from the Isle of Man, it's like stepping off the motorway into a little single track road. But yeah, the Irish racing, yeah, it's incredible. Really good. Proper old school, good racing. The lads over there are insane. The riding they can do over there is incredible. No wonder Ireland puts out some really fast TT races.
You got a top 10 finish in the Super Twin Race 2 at the Northwest. How was that?
Oh, that was great. So it was my second year at the Northwest this year. And I don't know, I generally like the Isle of Man because I like to ride on my own. But at the Northwest, there's something about being with a group of lads all overtaking each other in the slipstreams, and you generally do not know who's going to come out on top if you're in a group of bikes at the end of the race. It's really, really good racing.
And I guess the question that we all want to know is, are you coming back to the Isle of Man at any point? Because you're not this year, are you?
We are not this year, no. We are having a 100% break from the Isle of Man. So we almost didn't get to the Isle of Man last year. We had a very bad year, the family-wise. We ended up losing my wife's mum. We lost my nan. And then, I can't remember when it was now, is it about June? My dad had a big accident on the road. And he was put in intensive care for several weeks. And it was very much at the point where, are we even going to go to the Isle of Man, because we don't know how he's going to be doing. So it was a pretty late decision of us actually getting there. And then for Dad not to be there, having his support and knowledge of how to set up bikes was a big downfall.
And Daniel, can I just ask, how is your dad now?
Dad's doing really well. You know, it was a massive shock to the family, and we came back from the northwest of having such a good time there, and it was literally a couple of weeks later we had this big accident, and it just put a stop to the racing. So it was very touch and go if we were going to go to the Manx Grand Prix or not.
Here he comes. He's about to come up onto Glen Crutchy Road. Let's see what he's also done. The gap at Crem de Mona is 33 seconds. Second place for Chris Cook in the Manx Grand Prix. The gap at the end was 35.394 between Cook and Ingham. His lap time, 19 minutes, 14.94, 117.004.
Let's go over and speak to Daniel Ingham, who understandably is quite emotional here. He's been third, he's been second, and now, Dan, you're going to be on that top step. What does it mean to you?
Oh, it means the world. Yeah, I've been wanting this for a fair few years now. You know, thankfully, you know, Rich has been amazing, getting me an awesome bike and the casting technology. It's been a tough year this year, you know. Dad, if you're listening, you know, we've done it. So, I'm over the moon. Can't believe it.
I tell you what, you pulled the pin out from the word go.
Yeah, it was... I didn't know how I was going because it was a bit dodgy. I think I was too tense. My arm started aching. I was like, I've ruined it. And I come into the gooseneck and everybody was cheering. I was like, oh, maybe we've got it. Just steady over the mountain and I think we've done it. And we have. It's unbelievable. Can't believe it.
And you really have had a fantastic MGP in what have been very, very difficult circumstances. You've got your little ones on the bike there. Everyone is so proud of you.
Well, I'm over the moon. Thanks very much. It means the world.
That win then, I mean, obviously so devastating that your dad wasn't able to be there for it, but I'm guessing he was one of the first people you called afterwards.
Yeah, he was for sure. Yeah, he was. I remember that phone call sat on the side of in the paddock with a beer in the hand, and it was, you know, it was quite nice because when he came around, he was the point at which he told me to go. So it was going to be hard doing it without them. And unfortunately, Grandpops, who's helped me out in the pits for the whole time, been at the Manx, who's his dad, he obviously wasn't able to come as well. And Mum wasn't able to be there because obviously she was caring for Dad. So it was very much a year of just me, my wife Elena. She was helping out, you know, cooking us all the food, Angus and Bash doing the running around, and when Spud stepped up to come help us out in the pits because we were one man down in the pit lane. And, you know, it made it even more of a special event, basically.
That must have been so tough, Daniel, when you're trying to, you know, there's so much, as we keep saying, that goes into preparing you for a race like you get over here. To have to deal with that on a personal level must have been really, really awful.
It was. And, it you know, it made that win even more special, basically. Probably why I couldn't control myself when we got in the enclosure after. A good time now to have a bit of a breakaway. People don't see all the effort and preparation that goes into getting to the Isle of Man. You know, at the end of the day, we've still got to go to work 5 days a week. And people think you don't have a job and, you know, you're just working and riding bikes all the time. But last year, with all everything that went on, all we did was the Northwest and the Manx. That was the only racing we did. So it was a lot of pressure that I put on myself last year and a lot of stress getting everything ready. I feel like it's just a time to have a bit of a step away and see how much we miss it, basically. There's a few things I want to go and do. Also, I want to go and do a couple of the IRRC events. And time off work and everything else, we can't spend two and a half weeks in the Isle of Man and then several weeks racing. It just doesn't work.
What is the day job?
So I'm a design engineer for a motorcycle company a consultancy called VPro.
Okay, so you really are living and breathing bikes all the time then, aren't you?
Yeah, it is day in, day out bikes.
Oh, fingers crossed that you do miss it, because we definitely want to see you back here. And I'm always interested in anybody who might be listening and thinking about setting out on this journey, and just almost some advice for anybody in that position. And I wonder, Daniel, looking back, what you would say were the most pivotal lessons that you've learned racing on the mountain course here?
That is a question. The most important things is generally you couldn't do the homework is massive. You can't do too much homework. And also, don't listen to too many different people. You go into the Ironman, you've obviously raced for a number of years before that. You know what suits you best. And obviously there is some knowledge that is need to be taken in. But go and do your own thing. I mean, the first year, enjoy it. And first year is the only year you don't put any pressure on yourself. There's nothing else better than riding around that place in the first time you've ever done it. And just do what you do.
Well, as we're talking, TT qualifying week is due to get underway a week today. Do you keep up to date with TT? Will you be watching it, listening in?
Yeah, I will be watching all the live time in, and theoretically saying, oh, that's maybe where I could be. Dreaming away. This is going to be a telling point of when a wireless is on. How much I do miss it.
Yeah, well, we do, as I say, hope you miss it quite a lot, because we want to see you back here. Where can people keep up to date with what you're doing race-wise?
Basically on social media platforms. My main sponsor, who is Casson Technology, he puts quite a lot of stuff on LinkedIn and through his profiles on social medias as well.
And it's great to have that support, isn't it? And I guess the other side of it is that there must be a sense of responsibility that you have to your sponsor to make sure that you're doing as well as you possibly can do. That must be really hard.
Yeah, exactly that. You know, you try and give them back as much as they give you, basically, which in the grand scheme of things, the amount of support and stuff he gives me it's hard to give that back.
And how do you go about getting sponsors? Where are you looking?
When people say about sponsorship, they think it's a big team with mechanics and hospitality and all that, don't they? But reality is just loads of small businesses. And we've been quite lucky, because a lot of the people that help us now are just family members and, well, family friends, basically, we've known for since day one of racing, such as, you know, Derek Jones Butchers, which go back to the pork pie thing that we talked about earlier. So I used to be a pot washer there when I was a kid while I was at school, and she sponsored me since day one, basically.
Do you get any free pork pies?
Pork pies, yeah. And also like Digital Deadline, they were a sticker company. It was just a bit of a discount at start, and it now rolls, and they completely stick on my bikes and my van. And you know, if it just the sponsorship is a massive thing. And you know, it got to the point where we were probably getting a bit pushed out money wise with the sport, which has been a bit of a shame, because we was getting further and further up at the Manx, and that's where Rich Cook from Casson's Technology came in, and he's been a friend and family for ever. You know, he's always been taking his bikes and my dad to get repaired. And he talked to me years ago, and he said, you know, one day when I'm able to sponsor you, we'll do something. And that's when this came in 2022, when the Aprilia 660 came along. You know, Rich was true to his word. He was able to help us out. And he said, well, instead of sponsorship, how about you buy a bike? Because at that point, we had the Brookbuilt R6 for the big race. So Rich was like, yeah, let's do a second class. So I was able to turn to the twins. And then, you know, off the back of that, we ended up getting some good results. Unfortunately, the next year was when we had that poor pit stop where we had a problem with the fuel. So I was a bit devastated not giving the results he wanted to. I really wanted to give him to, you know, give back how much he's done for me. And then that went on, you know, yeah, went on to the 2024 when we bought the R6. So, you know, then that was in the goal of, you know, he wanted to help out in the big race. That is the main exposure. And the goal was to win and get it on the top step, which, you know, which we actually did. And getting the Aprilia on the top step at the same, or on the podium at the same year, was just icing on the cake, you know. Hopefully I was the payback I could give him. Paintworks, everybody needs a painter on their side, don't they, when you're racing? And then there's a few, yeah, you know, they're all just little sponsors, basically, but they've all come from knowing them, you know. And then there's Freeman Energy. He's helped us out with generators and UK race support, GR motorcycles, Clarity Windows, you know, they're all just small sponsors. There's Titech. They're all just small teams, but it's all those little bits to add up, and it's what you need. And, you know, and they're all just real personal people. It's been quite lucky not having to go out and try and to find people to help me out, basically.
Well, Daniel, it's been great talking to you. I just want to know, have you got a photograph of you either just after you won in 2024 or just crossing the line? Is there something in a pride of place which you can look at and reflect on?
Basically right behind me now, I've got a every year we've raced at the Isle of Man on a different bike on the wall. So
that's lovely. Well, I think you need that, don't you? Because it really does show just how far you've come.
Exactly, yeah. And it is, it's a big thing in life, isn't it? There's not many people get to fulfill their dream, and to do that and to do how we've done it is incredible.
It really is. Brilliant to talk to you, Daniel. Enjoy listening to the TT, and fingers crossed we'll see you back here next year.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Daniel Ingham. And if I don't see a photograph of him with a pork pie soon, I'll be very disappointed. But in all seriousness, we really do hope that he enjoys this year away from the Isle of Man, but it would be great to see him back here next year. There is plenty more to come from him. I put the link to where you can follow his racing on the podcast page. And as ever, this series is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, and you can find out more about them by visiting their website. It's kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. If you'd like to be part of the podcast in future, do give me a shout, Beth SB@manxradio.com. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye.